Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, Chapter 14, The Ideal Family Life. And there is an introduction, summary of the chapter. It wasn't written by Srila Prabhupada, it was written by the editors of the BBT, but it's helpful, so I'll read it. This chapter describes the occupational duties of the householder, according to the time, the country, and the performer. When Yudhisthira Maharaj became very much inquisitive about the occupational duties for the householder, Narada Muni advised him that a grihastha's first duty is to be fully dependent on Vasudev, Krishna, to try to satisfy him in all respects by executing one's prescribed devotional service. This devotional service will depend on the instructions of authorities and the association of devotees who are actually engaged in devotional service. The beginning of devotional service is shravanam, or hearing. One must hear from the mouths of realized souls. In this way, the grihastha's attraction to his wife and children will gradually be reduced. As for the maintenance of his family, a grihastha, while earning what he requires for his living, must be very conscientious and must not undergo extraordinary endeavor simply to accumulate money and unnecessarily increase in material comforts. Although a grihastha should externally be very active in earning his livelihood, he should internally be situated as a fully self-realized person without attachment for material gains. His dealings with family members or friends should be performed simply to fulfill their purpose. One should not be extravagantly engaged in this way. Instructions from family members and society should be accepted superficially. But in essence, the grihastha should be engaged in occupational duties advised by the spiritual master and shastra. Specifically, grihastha should engage in agricultural activities to earn money. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 18:44, Krishi Goraksha Vanijam, agriculture, cow protection, and trade are special duties of grihasthas. If by chance or by the grace of the Lord more money comes, should be properly engaged for the Krishna consciousness movement. One should not be eager to earn more money simply for sensual pleasure. A grihastha should always remember that one who is endeavoring to accumulate more money than necessary is to be considered a thief and is punishable by the laws of nature. A grihastha should be very much affectionate toward lower animals, birds and bees, treating them exactly like his own children. A grihastha should not indulge in killing animals or birds for sense gratification. He should provide the necessities of life even to the dogs and the lowest creatures and should not exploit others for sense gratification. Factually, according to the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam, every grihastha is a great communist who provides the means of living for everyone. Whatever a grihastha may possess, he should equally distribute to all living entities without discrimination. The best process is to distribute prasad. A grihastha should not be very much attached to his wife. He should engage even his own wife in serving guests with all attention. Whatever money a grihastha accumulates by the grace of God, he should spend in five activities, namely worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, receiving Vaishnavas and saintly persons, distributing prasad to the general public and to all living entities, offering prasad to his forefathers, and also offering prasad to his own self. Well, at least Grihastha should be always be ready to worship everyone as mentioned above. The Grihastha should not eat anything not offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita 3.13, Yagya Shistashinash Santo Muchante Sarvakyo Vishai. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food that is offered first for sacrifice. The Grihastha should also visit the holy places of pilgrimage mentioned in the Puranas. In this way, he should fully engage in worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the benefit of his family, his society, his country, and humanity at large. Text 1. Shri Yudhisthira Vacha Grihastha Etam Padavim Vidina Yena Chanjasa Yaya Deva Rishe Bruhi Madrisho Griha Mudadi. Shri Yudhisthira Uvacha. Yudhisthira Maharaj said, Grihastha, person living with his family, etam, this, the process mentioned in the previous chapter, paravim, position of liberation, vidina, according to the instructions of Vedic scripture, yena, by which, cha, also, anjasa, easily, yayat, may get, devarishe, a great sage among the demigods, bruhi, kindly explain, madrisha, such as me, griham buddha, di, completely ignorant of the goal of life. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni, O Lord, O my Lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation according to the instructions of the Vedas. Purport. In the previous chapters, the great sage Narada has explained how a brahmachari, a vanaprastha, and a sannyasi should act. He first explained the dealings of a brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi because these three ashrams or statuses of life are extremely important for fulfillment of the goal of life. One should note that in the brahmachari ashram, vanaprastha ashram, and sannyas ashram, there is no scope for sex life, whereas sex is allowed in the grihastha life under regulations. Narada Muni therefore first described brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyas because he wanted to stress that sex is not at all necessary. Although one who is absolutely requires it is allowed to enter grihastha life or household life, which is also regulated by the shastras and guru. Yudhisthira Maharaj could understand all this. Therefore, as a grihastha, he presented himself as griha muradi, one who is completely ignorant of the goal of life. A person who remains a householder in family life is certainly ignorant of life's goal. He is not very much advanced in intelligence. As soon as possible, one should give up his so-called comfortable life at home and prepare to undergo austerity or tapasya, tapo divyam putraka, according to the instructions given by Rishabhdev to his sons, We should not create a so-called comfortable situation, but must prepare to undergo austerity. This is how a human being should actually live to fulfill life's ultimate goal. Sri Yudhisthira Vacha Grihastha Etam Padavim Vidina Yena Chandasa Iya Deva Rishe Bruhi Madrisha Griha Mudadi. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni, O my Lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we, who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life, may also easily attain liberation, according to the instructions of the Vedas. As Prabhupada mentions here, that the brahmachari ashram, sannyasa ashram, vanaprastha ashram, they're extremely important to fulfill the goal of life. But that doesn't make the grihastha ashram any less important to fulfill the goal of life, because all the different ashrams are training for two things, knowledge and renunciation. Knowledge that we're not this body, and to renounce the material conception of life, which means not only we're not this body, but we're not the owners of this material existence. Krishna is the controller, and that Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the real friend and benedictor of everyone. But in the material world, we come here with the idea of imitating Krishna, and therefore the imitation generally is in the grihastha ashram. Of course, nowadays, grihastha ashram seems to have disappeared, but it's just appeared in a different form, that's all. Grihastha ashram means the idea of enjoying together, and in order to do that with generally, it used to be man and woman, but nowadays things are a little different. That enjoying together and under some form of economic development for sense gratification. Some kind of cooperation for economic development and sense gratification. But of course, it's become so distorted in Kali Yuga that it's really hard to sometimes recognize. People have fallen in love with all kinds of things. Even we have one temple in Detroit, which was formerly called the Fisher Mansion. Fisher was, he was the owner of automobiles. He was like Ford. He had a whole line of fancy automobiles, and he became fabulously wealthy and bought this mansion in Detroit, Deva something ashram now. And we bought that ashram for something like $80,000 at that time. And of course, the owners, they took away everything valuable that they could take with them. After they sold it to us, they just stripped the place as much as they could. And although Prabhupada originally asked that they donate the mansion, because we're beggars, we have no money, they wouldn't give it. They said, oh, $80,000 was the minimum. Of course, we didn't know they had bought it for a fraction of that themselves. In any case, we had this mansion was there, and Mr. Fisher, he had two dogs, and he was in love with the dogs. So he actually, his estate, the dogs inherited. Pious dogs. And after he died, after the dogs died, he had them buried in his swimming pool in silver caskets. And he covered it over, the swimming pool. So if you go there, you can go to the place of pilgrimage where the dogs lie. So anything's possible in Kali Yuga. There's no limit to the degradation that's possible. But normally householder means there is wife and husband and children, and they work together cooperatively, not just for sense gratification, but that's necessary. Grihasthas are the basic principle of economic development. In the universal form, grihasthas, they represent the belly of the universal form. And as Prabhupada emphasizes here, that economic development is basically or principally based upon food production. Anad bhavati bhutani parjana anasambhava. That all living entities subsist on food grains. Now, nowadays people, maybe they're beginning to recognize it, that food is necessary, as a matter of fact, because of this coronavirus pandemic and the economic problems that it's caused. We may not be feeling it so much here in Slovenia, but in the poorer countries in Africa and in the Middle East, there are many countries on the verge of, people are on the verge of starvation. They can't get sufficient to eat. Now, that's when someone really becomes aware of the value of food, is when there is none. When you're eating 10 meals a day, you're not so, you don't have so much food insecurity. Maybe because you're eating 10 meals a day, that maybe because you have food insecurity, maybe that's why you're eating 10 meals a day. But in any case, if there's 10 meals a day to be provided, then it's pretty sure that the country, at least superficially, has enough production or can obtain a food or can obtain that food somehow or another. But anad bhavati bhutani parjana anasambhava. That all living entities, they subsist on food grains, and grains come from rain. And rain comes from sacrifice. And sacrifice is born of prescribed duties, and those prescribed duties are found in the Vedas, and the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead is the one who's controlling everything. The Vedas are his instructions. So grihasthas, they're essential for economic development. Without that economic development, for food grains specifically, then the one or two japatis that the sannyasis get, or the handful of grains, rice that the brahmacharis get, will not be provided. And therefore you'll have very skinny sannyasis and very tired brahmacharis. So these things are quite, or brahmacharinis too, by the way. These things are necessary. Economic development, and the senses have to be gratified as much as necessary. Yuktahara viharasya, yukta cheta sukarmasu, yukta swapnu vodasya, yoga bhavati dukaha. Krishna doesn't say yogis don't eat, yogis don't sleep, etc. He says yuktahara, whatever is necessary. Prabhupada gives the example of salt to taste. If you have some preparation, then you have to add a little bit of salt to make it tasty. If there's no salt, it becomes tasteless. So therefore the expression is salt to taste. Because without tasting, without actually getting some taste from the food, you can't digest it. It's not possible to digest food that's tasteless. Krishna says food in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that food is tasteless, is in the mode of ignorance. That when we taste something, that sends a signal from the brain to the stomach, to the factory that will digest the food, what kind of food is coming. When the food enters into the stomach, the intestines don't start dialoguing with each other. The small intestine doesn't ask the stomach, my dear stomach, what is this? What did you send me? The stomach goes, I don't know, no one told me. They just sent it my way. I didn't even bother reading the label, but it's here. And when it gets to the large intestine, etc., similarly, there's no communication. The only communication with the food begins at the time when we're eating the food, if it has some taste. And if it's not taste, it has no taste, it's called what? Food that has no taste, or anything that has no taste, is called what? Does anyone know? Hogwash. I don't know, hogwash. That would be really bad. That hogwash definitely has a taste. No, it's called poison. Because, according to Ayurveda, that which you can digest is called food. That which you can't digest is called poison. And that which helps you digest the food is called medicine. So if something has no taste, then you won't be able to digest it, and therefore it's poison. Prabhupada gives the example of, I forget the poison, that it has no taste. And if no one is, well, at least generally speaking, the scientists, they have to taste whatever it is. No matter how, much in the mode of ignorance, they have to taste it. So you can imagine what sometimes the scientists have to taste in order to figure out what its properties are. I won't mention it. So there's some poison that as soon as you taste it, you're dead. So you can't tell anyone what it tastes like. So no one knows what it tastes like. If someone wants to volunteer to find out, good luck. Join the other illustrious scientists who tried. In any case, so everything should have some taste, and there has to be some kind of economic development so that some kind of sense gratification can be there. Without taste, there can be absolutely no sense gratification. The senses demand some taste. Just like if this room wasn't clean for 3 weeks, no one arranged anything, and anyone came in here, we wouldn't actually have a very pleasant experience. We'd probably want to leave. Because our eyes demand some taste, our ears demand some taste, our sense of smell demands some flavor, etc. So even not only our tongue demands some taste, but even our mind wants some kind of pleasant experience. Our sight, our smell, our touch, everything we want to be pleasant. That's called also kind of taste. And the grihasthas are the ones who are principally concerned with creating that taste. Because the brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, the sannyasis, they're engaged in a kind of different business, but they also require some kind of maintenance. And the grihasthas, who are a little bit more involved with maintaining the other ashrams, also have to create a pleasant circumstance for the society so that the society goes on peacefully and everyone feels satisfied. Nowadays, of course, people have forgotten all about relationships or relationships between people. They think real taste is going to come from some technology. The perfect example is previously if you watched Indian movies, all the movies were quite slow compared to the current movies. In the current movies, you have to have at least, the hero has to kill at least 20 people in the movie, or else he's considered to be effeminate. And there has to be at least 5 scenes of romance between, in different forms, in order to be considered a bona fide movie nowadays, that people would have any reason to go and see. Even the cartoons, these things have to be there, or else the children won't even watch anymore. It's too slow. But in the previous Indian movies, like Sita's Wedding, which I don't know if you're familiar with, you've seen Sita's Wedding? About Lord Ramachandra and Sita. Has anyone ever seen Sita's Wedding? Probably one of the most beautiful Indian movies they ever made. It's all about Sita and Ram. Obviously, Sita's Wedding was. Yeah, it's all about, and even Mahabharata, which I couldn't, I only saw like 15 minutes of, that all India stopped for when it was playing. It's all about relationships, mood, exchanges between people. And therefore people, there's, you know, the violence is 15 minutes and the relationships is another hour and a half. The people don't like that. It's too, it doesn't really suit their mentality because it's too close to the mode of goodness. Plenty of passion, but, you know, has a tinge of goodness and people can't really relate to it. Why are these people so good? There's something wrong with them. They're a threat. But that's essential for the Grihastha Ashram. That's what keeps the society together. It's not simply that the man works and gets more and more money for sense gratification, a bigger and bigger house, bigger car, more fancy car, kids all go to the best university. That's not what keeps the Grihastha Ashram together. It's the sweetness of the relationships. As a matter of fact, often we find people make fabulous amounts of money by working as lawyers 18 hours a day practically, and provide huge mansions for their family, and then the wife runs away with the servant. Because at least the servant talks to her. So this idea that everything is going to be solved that by simply getting money, as Prahlad Maharaj said, money, money, sweeter than honey. The professional soldier, the thief, and the merchant, they'll risk their dear lives just to get some money for sense gratification. But actually, real sense gratification is clean water, pure water, fresh food, nicely prepared, fresh air, and above everything, sweet relationships, sweet loving relationships based upon Krishna consciousness. Because they can't be sweet relationships if Krishna is not involved. Because Krishna is the source of all sweetness. And as much as Krishna is involved in the relationship, then it becomes sweet. So even in Grihastha life, it's not just meant for gross material sense gratification. It's meant to learn how to act in a sweet relationship with others, whether it be the children or the wife or the husband or the friends or the relatives, whatever. How to make the relationship as sweet as possible. So here Prabhupada says the husband should not be so much attached to his wife. But then in the next sentence, in the summary, the husband should not be so much attached to his wife, but then the next line Prabhupada says that he should treat even the animals, the birds and the bees and everything else, as affectionate as he treats his children. So it's not that in Grihastha life there's no affection, but the affection is in relationship to the wife and children, etc., in relationship to Krishna. It's not that if we're relating in relationship to Krishna, then we won't be affectionate to others. Actually, that's when real affection begins. And therefore, by the Grihastha engaging his wife and serving the brahmacharis, the sannyasis, and the sadhus especially, then it's not that he loses affection for his wife, but his wife actually becomes, and himself and the whole family becomes more and more Krishna conscious, and therefore the relationship becomes even more closer spiritually. So therefore this chapter is about how to spiritualize all the relationships so that even Grihastha life becomes as pleasant as possible. Prabhupada said it can't be absolutely pleasant. It can't be absolutely unpleasant. But Prabhupada said if they sit down morning and evening and chant Hare Krishna together, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and worship the deities, then it'll become maximally spiritualized, and therefore the husband and wife will stay together, maintain the children, bring them up in spiritual consciousness, maybe even send them to a gurukul if there's such a thing. And at the end of life, they'll take vanaprastha and make their lives successful by the lady eventually going back to the children, teaching them renunciation and knowledge, and the husband taking sannyas and spreading Krishna consciousness and making his life successful. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. Someone complaining there? What? Sounds like someone's being tortured or something.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj. I wonder about this salt, like modern medicine. Like
Himalayan salt. We only use Himalayan salt.
Like modern medicine advice that we should be careful with the salt. And then I'm wondering about black salt. Either black salt is maybe less problematic than normal salt.
I don't know, what color is Himalayan salt? In between. In between is better. No, salt has different properties. General's table salt, sodium chloride, generally accumulates water in the body, which will lead to high blood pressure. Rock salt is generally quite heavy to digest. Himalayan salt will help open the, or some have something called somersault, will open up the channels in the body, and therefore there'll be less of a tendency to salt to cause any kind of internal damage. Salt is necessary. It's one, it has two properties. It's water and fire. Therefore, for the fire, it helps increase digestion. And for the water, it builds the bodily strength. But it has to be digested itself. If it's too heavy, it may tax the digestive fire, although it has fire itself within it, because it's made partly out of fire. Because it's also water, though, it may, some salts have more of a tendency to cause edema or accumulation of the water in the body due to lack of closing the channels in the body for elimination and due to suppressing the fire of digestion to some degree. Is that right?
One more thing. One devotee, she owns some store with those superfood, biologic things. She advised me to mix this Himalayan salt with yodic, half-half, that Himalayan salt lacks this yod. This is how she explained
it. Yod is iodine. Well, anyone who thinks that there is one formula for everyone was probably in trouble themselves. There's so many, everyone has a different body, everyone has different energies working in their body, every season is different, every age is different, there's so many factors. There's no, therefore, such a medicine that deals with personal medicine is not very economically profitable, because it takes too much time to deal with people individually, and therefore is generally not so popular. Mass medicine, that's one formula fits everyone, one shoe fits everyone, is much more popular because you can sell many, one thing to many people. You don't have to worry about whether it's actually appropriate or not. Therefore, modern economics is such, because people don't, are not trained, you know, people are too much interested in accumulating unnecessary things. In order to do that, you have to get unnecessary money. In order to do that, you have to sell unnecessary things. So that's modern society. And the result is that people, for instance, they take unnecessary things to eat. They don't know what's actually appropriate. Everything is advertisement. This is the miracle food, it cures everyone. But that would be a miracle. Maybe Soma Rasa in the heavenly planets, but you have to have a body to digest it. Anything else?
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. I would like to ask you, when you mentioned cow protection, how could we perform this protection cows? Of course, we don't eat meat. And
well, that's good.
Yes, and I don't have farm. I don't have even possibilities to have my own cow, for example. Is there any suggestion for first step, what to do?
First step is we have to organize society so that we become more powerful preachers. Now, we can preach about cow protection, but most people won't apply it in their lives. But as you said, some people apply it by not killing them and eating them. So that's one way of having cow protection is preach about the glories of maintaining the cows, protecting them. And also, we have restaurants when we could, or we distribute prasadam, especially with ghee, cooked in ghee, then people will get a harder taste in eating the blood and the flesh of the cow. The next thing is that if we become powerful enough in preaching, then we can get a variety of people within our society who some of them will be interested in opening farms and maintaining cows there and showing an example, at least. So, two things. Preaching is our main business here. And showing a good example and distributing prasadam. And eventually finding the people who can open farms and encouraging them to do so. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.